Joe Hogsett resigns. Will he run for mayor? A proposal calling for nonprofits to help pay for police. The Indy Chamber calls for a commuter tax and a budget surplus that leads to budget cuts. That plus the battle over cold beer, the youngest deputy, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 18, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Joe Hogsett submitted his resignation as U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Indiana. Hogsett is leaving after 4 years in the job and after making public comments that he intended to serve out his term. It's a move that has fueled speculation that Hogsett will run for mayor, though Hogsett didn't explain why he's leaving. Former Senator Evan Bayh said, quote, "I think he would be a great mayor, particularly with his record fighting crime and violence in our streets, which I think is probably the foremost issue facing Indianapolis today." Will Joe Hogsett run for mayor? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Dan Parker, is Joe Hogsett a candidate?
Well, he's still the U.S. attorney until the end of the month.
Will he be a candidate at the first of the month?
Well, I don't know, but I hope he is. I mean, Joe's had a great four-year record at the U.S. Attorney's Office, compiling a great record, fighting crime, public corruption, child pornography, you know, convicted more criminals in a year than ever before. So he's got a great record, and that is the biggest issue facing Indianapolis. So,
you considered running for mayor, and last week decided against it, issued a statement, said that the next mayor needs public safety experience. Now we see Hogsett's resignation and Evan Bayh speaking out as if he's a candidate. This looks pretty choreographed.
Well, if it was choreographed, the folks in the press could probably tell you that it wasn't. It was sort of haphazard on Monday. I mean, I made a decision for myself after the tragic weekend we had with the shooting in Broad Ripple and Officer Wren being gunned down. I was speaking for myself, but obviously, what I'm looking for in a mayor, obviously Joe Hogsett has that credential, being a great crime fighter at the U.S. Attorney's Office.
If Joe Hogsett isn't running for mayor, would he be stepping down at this point?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to say anything bad about Joe Hogsett because he's still his district attorney until the end of the month. And he knows where I live. And, I totally expect him to be a candidate for mayor eventually. I mean, he said for months and months he wasn't going to give up his job because it's the best job he ever had. And then he's done this jump switch, and so I would assume that the only reason he would do that is because he changed his mind and he wants to run for mayor. So having said that, this would be a very interesting campaign. I think that he would be a formidable candidate. I think,
especially if Evan Bayh is going to give him money.
Well, I mean, let's go back to your comment earlier. I haven't seen such choreography since Dancing with the Stars went off the air. I mean, this was well scripted all week. And first of all, they're not allowed to coordinate like that, and I think they did. So, I just broke my own rule. But anyway,
you just accused somebody of a federal crime, I think.
But no, I mean, it's one of those things where this would be a good race if he gets in it, and. I totally expect Greg Ballard to win again because people of Indianapolis think that Greg Ballard has the best interests of Indianapolis at heart. And even though the demographics are not strong in the Republican column like they used to be, he still gets style points for people don't see him as a politician. They see him as somebody who cares for his community. And I think that's a very strong thing when any time you're up for reelection.
All right. So let's stick with the Democratic side of things, though. Frank Short is running. Ed Delaney filed a committee last week after the Hogsett announcement, said that he's evaluating what he's going to do. If Joe Hogsett gets in, does that clear the field?
I think it pretty much does. And I think both of the individuals you mentioned have, in so many words, indicated that in the past. I don't think anybody, well, somebody must have maybe thought about these possibilities. But when you look back 4 or 5 months ago when Joe Hogsett was saying in a pretty emphatic fashion that he still had a mission to accomplish and he was not done with the work that that lay before him in the U.S. Attorney's Office, I think those gentlemen you mentioned thought, well, here's an open field. We'll run toward the ballot box and see if we can upend Greg Ballard. But this does change everything, and I think he will run for all the reasons that I won't get into the whole notion of choreography, but everything just seems to be just right. And you wouldn't change
your
mind.
Remember the Rex Early rule. 98% of what goes on is exactly as it appears.
Exactly as it appears. Right.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate.
You don't get Evan Bayh coming out.
Holding a news conference.
Holding essentially a news conference.
That wasn't a news conference. It was set up because he was going to be there anyway.
A drive-by.
And come out with as strong a statement as he did if he wasn't pretty darn sure that Joe Hogsett was going to run for mayor. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but the truth is Joe Hogsett is, as U.S. attorney, is in a particularly good situation to run for the mayor of Indianapolis at a time when crime has become the big issue.
And as U.S. attorney, he's been a pretty good politician.
Oh, absolutely. He's done a great job of promoting all of the things that they've done at the U.S. Attorney General's office, and a lot of it has involved crime and corruption, and so I can imagine some great TV ads coming out of that.
Assuming that he decides to run, mm-hmm. I agree with Mike. I mean, it will be... it'll be a very interesting campaign.
He'll have to explain his change of mind, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously. I mean, I think that probably comes first more than anything. But, given the situation that the city is facing with an epidemic of violent crime, maybe that had an effect on him. But I think it will be an interesting campaign between two individuals who can put out their vision for the city.
Who can raise money.
I think, though, this is not quite the same situation as when a candidate says they're going, or when a public office holder says they're going to serve out a term. He wasn't elected. And so that is a different situation when you say you're going to finish a term than it is when you're appointed.
And I do think the crime situation, as Dan suggests, really does open the door. It is a crisis. City officials have labeled it. Public safety officials have, in some cases, labeled it a crisis. So what better opportunity for a candidate, would-be candidate, to say, I'm needed. I better step in here.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, if Joe Hogsett runs for mayor, what category will his decision fit into? Your choices are A, broken pledge, B, flip-flop, C, change of heart, or D, revelation. Last week's question, was Tony Bennett's punishment severe enough? 22% said yes, 78% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. There's a proposal this week for nonprofits to help pay for new police in Indianapolis. City County Council President Maggie Lewis says the idea originated with the IMPD Staffing Commission. She stressed any funding they provided would be voluntary, but the proposal still struck a nerve with some people, including Kathy Lyons, who is on the board for a nonprofit.
It's like, gee, let's ask these families who have trouble putting food on the table to donate to the local food pantry. Yeah, it just makes no sense.
When a donor makes a financial contribution to an organization, they are really funding the mission of the organization. They are not funding public safety.
And that's Jennifer Ferrer of the American Diabetes Association. Mike McDaniel, does that idea have any merit?
This idea peaked the day it was announced. And it's not going to go anywhere. Nothing's going to happen with this. Nonprofits have a hard enough time raising money for their various organizations, and and doing a lot of good things for this community and communities all across the country. And to ask those people to dip into what money they do raise is a very difficult thing to do. Even on a voluntary basis, that's a hard thing to do. And so I don't see this going anywhere. You know, there are a lot of ideas out there, and we have to have a holistic approach to crime. The mayor talked about that in a speech he gave today, where he talked about education, he talked about families, he talked about the existence of crime and trying to get repeat offenders off the streets, all those kinds of things. We have to come at this as a community from a lot of different approaches, but this idea is a real stretch, and it's not going to go anywhere.
This is a trial balloon that didn't float.
Well, this idea has been debated for years. It was part of the commission. You know, it was presented in a spirit of, you know, trying to, what kind of revenue can be put together to put more police on the street? Mm-hmm. I mean, the public safety director believes there needs to be more police on the street. Chief of police does. FOP does. Democrats believe there need to be more police on the street. The only person who doesn't think more police need to be on the street is Mayor Ballard. In fact, he had a statement this week that said it would be an act of insanity to put more police on the street. I think he's the only one that holds that position.
Now, Dan, he has asked for more money from the council for three years in a row.
He said it was an act of insanity to put more police on the street.
And the Democrats on the council
have
turned him down 3 years in a
row. Did he not?
3 years in a row.
Did he not say that?
Democrats on the council blocking
police
on the
street.
He didn't say it that way.
Yeah.
It was in a slightly different context.
3 years in a row they blocked him for putting
more
police on the
street. He said to take the same approach would be an act of insanity.
And expect that you'd have different results.
Will this help lay the groundwork for a tax increase?
I think that it would be very difficult to increase taxes, even for police. You know, Mayor Ballard came into office on the wave of frustration about increased taxes. And I think it'd be very difficult for him at this time to go back and say, even for public safety, we need to increase taxes.
This is going nowhere.
I think that's right. I think Mike's assessment that this peaked this week and is now on the downslope is probably accurate for all the reasons that have been mentioned. I don't think anybody's necessarily, even Mayor Ballard, is opposed to the notion of more officers on the street. And in fairness,
put 80 on this year.
Well, I'm saying there are people moving through the police clap. I mean, you're right. He did use those words, but I think it was to the notion of, and we can debate the semantics here, but it wasn't necessarily police in and of themselves would be an insane proposition to put on the street. It's just that that was not the solution, the sole solution.
The FOP is talking about how the staffing is way down from what it should be.
It's 250 officers under from when he took over the department.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's a related idea from the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce, a commuter tax. Every day, more than 200,000 people cross into Marion County to work, but their income tax goes to the county where they live. A commuter tax would generate money for Marion County that could pay for road repairs and even more police officers. Mayor Greg Ballard says any major change would have to be made at the state level. Leslie Weidenbender, is that an idea that lawmakers would embrace?
No. First, you have to think. First, you have to think about the politics a little bit. First, a commuter tax is not popular. Any tax increase isn't popular. Secondly, the legislators that represent Indianapolis are Democrats, and they are way out of power right now. The legislators who represent the Dona counties, the suburban counties, are Republicans, and they are way in power, and they are not going to go for that.
So I ask again, does this help lay the groundwork for a local tax increase?
Well, again, let's go back to what we were just saying with Mayor Ballard. It's hard once you have staked out the position he did this week, and whether it's insane or not, or whether it's prudent or not, or whether still it's clear he was saying that is not the answer, that's not the silver bullet that's going to address this problem. If the chief executive of the city says that in some fashion, it's going to be very, very difficult for anybody to make an argument that he now, in the institution and the governmental entity he represents, wants and needs that funding.
Okay.
So I was more verbose than Leslie when she said no. I went a little bit longer, but the result's the same. No.
Yet the head of the Indy Chamber is a former deputy mayor under Greg Ballard. Is there something going on here other than the attempt to get a commuter tax?
No, I don't think so. Look, the city can't unilaterally do this. They have to go to the legislature. There is no, you know, desire in the legislature to raise a commuter tax for Marion County. Although they're what, probably 250,000 to 500,000 people a day drive into Marion County to work here. And I can understand the frustration because the services have to be provided for those people who also drive in here every day. Right. But where they've done this in other cities, in Pittsburgh and other places around the country, it's been a disaster.
Law of unintended consequences.
Well, you know Pittsburgh. I mean, you know, you clearly do. And that's been a disaster there. This is not going to work here. It's not going to happen.
The biggest problem here is that I see is that there's going to be no support for it politically, like Leslie said. You're going to have a Republican legislature raise taxes on essentially the Republican base in the state of Indiana. I see that happening. Never. But I think worse from the perspective of the city of Indianapolis is that you're going to the legislature basically on a bended knee to beg for a bailout. And I don't think that that's necessarily the position that the city of Indianapolis should put itself in. I mean, we have to figure out our own problems. And I don't think that we're going to get bailed out by anybody. So everything needs to be put on the table in the city first.
I think you're going to see more and more pressure put on the General Assembly for all municipalities
for
to have the ability
room.
To do what they want to do regarding taxes.
But again,
because
we're talking
the strain is very great right now.
But we're talking about raising local taxes.
Exactly,
and
that's the only way it's going to happen.
Outside the box
and
ideas.
So far, we've been talking about the tension between Republicans and Democrats in the House and the Senate. Let's not forget also maybe not as potent a force, but it's very real and it's been there a long time, and that's the breakdown of Indianapolis versus everybody else.
Sure.
Because there's a long-running, I mean, aside from political affiliation, there's a long-standing belief that Indianapolis is always at the trough and always has the benefit of this and this and this.
Which is interesting, because Marion County is a donor county.
If
you talk to other mayors across the state, what they're looking for from Indianapolis is to take on that leadership role in the legislature to go get what Mike is talking about, which is essentially, you know, fiscal flexibility for communities to solve their own problems.
Moving on, the administration of Governor Mike Pence has told state agencies to hold back 4.5% of their funding for the current fiscal year, despite news this week that the state has a $2 billion reserve. A spokesperson says the administration uses the spending cuts to manage potential budget shortfalls and ensure that the state maintains adequate reserves. Additionally, public universities have been told not to spend 2% of their appropriations. John Schwantes, does that go against what lawmakers intended?
Well, I guess ask certain Democrats, and they would probably tell you it goes against what they intended. Ask people of the governor's party if that's what they intended. You'll get a mixed, probably more nuanced result. This is the same debate we've seen now for several sessions when Mike Pence's predecessor, Mitch Daniels, decided to unilaterally, I guess, using his authority as, again, the chief executive of the state, whether it's explicit or not, but he took that authority and started asking agencies to refund certain portions of the budgeted amounts. Now we're seeing it with Mike Pence. But it's the same debate to a large extent we're seeing at the federal level when Congress, the Republican control. This is my point. The point is this. When you, a legislative body enacts laws, whether it's a budget or the timetable for rollout of, say, Affordable Care Act, and they say that the executive branch doesn't listen to the legislature.
That's true.
That's exactly a parallel, too.
I disagree. I think there's a huge
difference. Oh, I thought my metaphor was pretty good.
There's a huge difference because in the Indiana budget, they explicitly give the governor authority to manage the budget in whatever way. They specifically allow the Indiana governor to say, I'm not going to spend here, or I am going to spend there. And this has been going on since long before Mitch Daniels. Every governor I've covered since I've been here 20 years has used reversions in some way. I mean, Evan Bayh may have been the king of using reversions to build up the state's reserves. And so there's nothing going on here that hasn't been going on for years.
But the timing's curious, isn't it, that you make an announcement that we've got a $2 billion surplus and with some fanfare, and then before the week is out, you cut spending.
Well, I mean, I think that it goes to a debate that needs to happen in the legislature about some of the underlying problems, with our revenue stream. It's not growing the way it should. There's problems there. But you have local communities struggling. who can't pay their bills. You have universities underfunded. You have K through 12. So there's a lot of needs out there, and I just hope that we're not, you know, sort of, you know, worshiping to the surplus god just to protect the surplus.
Well, it's all about creating a AAA credit rating, right?
Well, it's not just about a AAA credit rating. Not at all. It's a lot more than that. You know, your $2 billion surplus would run state government for a month and a half.
Yeah.
If you had to dip into it. The revenue forecasts have not met the projections over the last year, what they were projected to be a year ago to what they are today. And so that's a problem. So any family, any business who would see this kind of situation coming would start being cautious about how they're spending their money. And that's all they're doing here. They're trying to protect
We've
that.
We've seen budgeting practices in the past, that. Though, where they would spend the surplus down.
This is no different than what Ms. Daniels was
like. Well, I think they might have learned their lesson from that. Because
going back to Obama, exactly.
They had more than $2 billion in the bank. And that's right, the legislature spent that money. And that wasn't
much. They didn't necessarily spend it. It was tax cuts.
They reduced the revenue, but that was a much smaller or much larger percentage of the overall spending than this $2 billion is now.
All right. A year-long legal fight over cold beer sales in Indiana convenience stores will continue. A federal judge shot down a lawsuit brought by the convenience stores last month. Under current Indiana law, convenience, grocery, and pharmacy stores are only allowed to sell beer warm. The Indiana Petroleum Marketers and Convenience Store Association announced this week that it has filed an appeal to the latest ruling, and the group is also filing a new lawsuit in state court. Executive Director Scott Imus.
Responsible retailers and consumers have lived long enough under Indiana's antiquated law. Hoosiers are tired of paying the surcharges liquor stores apply to cold beer. They are sick of having limited choices on where they can buy their cold beer.
Dan Parker, are they whistling in the wind?
Well, I think they're in the wrong, you know, court. They need to be over at the legislature making their argument.
They can't win there.
Well, then you
got to prove that, right?
Well, they got to work on it a little bit more. I mean, this is an issue that, how old is this issue? You've been there longer than me.
That's for sure.
Are they going anywhere with this?
Probably not. And I'll say right up front, I have a dog in this fight, so it's hard for me to make too many comments without looking like a homer on this one. But I will say this. I think where Dan's going with this is why it ought to be fought out in the legislature and not in the courts. Is the courts traditionally have not overturned the activity of a state legislative body, on especially on issues that deal with things like this.
Well, things that are regular.
And they're consistent on that, and so that's why I don't think it's going anywhere in the courts, and it has to be fought out in the legislature.
So are the convenience stores going to the courts in order to get attention and build up public support for their side of this argument?
It probably doesn't hurt, because you hear the line of argument that comes forth here is the notion of an average $1 according to Mr. Imus, a $1 typical surcharge that's associated with cold beer. And if for consumers who like their beer cold, I guess that's a pocketbook issue. So it doesn't hurt.
Which most people do. It's obviously a competitive issue. But all you got to do is listen to them. It's a competitive issue.
But I mean, the legal argument isn't without merit, because you look at it, the same people who are perhaps the staunchest advocates of keeping the status quo, and in every other aspect, they say, we don't want to pick winners and losers. Government should stay out of it. Let the free market rule. But in this case, we don't want that to happen. So there are some inconsistencies that the courts probably
are the convenience stores wasting their time and money?
I don't think they're wasting their time and money, because someday this will change. But it's not going to be immediate. This is part of a larger network of laws, and every time you tweak one, you affect a bunch of other things, and that's part of the problem. But eventually, these laws will change.
Basically, you know, you have these local Indiana owners of these package stores, which have a very powerful influence over legislators. And,
that's right.
You know, until this group can figure out how to change that dynamic,
nothing
changes. It's not going to go anywhere.
Finally, a fundraiser will be held next weekend for the youngest sheriff's deputy in the country. Wyatt Schmaltz, a three-year-old from Huntington, is battling a rare form of cancer. Last week, the county sheriff swore in Wyatt as an honorary deputy from his hospital bed at IU's Riley Hospital for Children. The story has since been featured on CNN, Fox News, and in other countries. Sheriff Terry Stoffel says people from around the world have called him wanting to help Wyatt.
If Chicago is sending a badge down there, I'm going to get the package here in the next day or two, and I'll take it over to Wyatt's house and drop it off.
Mike McDaniel, if your name's Wyatt, you should get a chance to be sheriff.
I'll tell you, this is a great story, and a lot of people are praying for this little boy, and the smile speaks for itself. I mean, he loves police officers and law enforcement, and for them to present him with that badge says something about that particular department, and people all over the world are cheering for this little guy.
Great move. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.